All right. Well, we are going to start something new tonight. Ruh-roh, what? You don't like change? I promise it won't hurt that much. An effort to, because school's in, try to make sure that we're out on time, we're going to do something on Wednesday nights that I'm going to call Midweek Theology. And so what we're going to do is begin to walk through theology, if you want to call it systematic theology, I guess you could, because we will be walking through systematically through some theology. We're not going to go too heavy and too hard, but we're going to do it in sort of a more structured manner. So I'm going to take the first 15 minutes or so, and we're going to walk through whatever that topic is. And then I'm going to do some application, and then at the end, I'm going to force myself to cut some time, so if you have questions, we'll have opportunity for you to ask questions. Now, my hope is that this is going to encourage us not just to be smarter and have more knowledge, but to be able, during the application time and your question time, to be able to begin to apply this to your life so that you can go out and live this. These are theological truths that should impact our life, not in the sense of, oh man, I'm so glad I know that. Now I'm one up on my neighbor who's always asking me questions, but so that we can go out and say, in light of what we have learned about God, which is basically, that's what theology is, the study of God, that we have a better understanding of how we are going to live. All right, so that's what we're going to do on Wednesday nights. Now, let me just go ahead and tell you, there are probably going to be times where I don't finish on Sunday, or I cover something on Sunday and I don't get as deep as I want to. We'll take a time out on Midweek Theology. We'll handle that, and then we'll jump right back in as we go. So that's kind of where we're headed and what the context is. So just put your thinking caps on and be ready with good questions at the end, all right? So what is one of the most loving things that a creator God could do for us? And the answer to that question is that he would enable us to know him and have a relationship with him. Now, why? Why is that one of the most loving things that God could do for you and for me? Because God is the most supreme being of all, and to know him is the highest good for us. So your highest good is the ability to know the God that created you because of who he is, because of his character, because of his person, because he is the most supreme being, and because he is the highest being with all power, with all knowledge, because in his glory, he is glorious to behold. In his love, it is great and it is good for you to know his love. So one of the greatest things, one of the most loving things, one of the most gracious things that God could do was create us with the ability to know him. There is no one of higher importance. There is no one of greater magnificence than God. Therefore, for God to hide himself from us, to keep himself from us, would be an unloving act. However, apart from God revealing himself to us, we would know absolutely nothing about him. Now, that is a very humbling thought, but it's one that we need to grasp. So I'm going to say it again. Without God deciding and acting so that you and I could know him and revealing himself to us, then we would have absolutely no way to know, to understand, to comprehend who he is. And this is for two reasons. Number one, regardless of what you may say when you look in the mirror or what you may tell your spouse, you are not smart enough. We do not have the ability with our limited mental resources to discover on our own or to understand that which is so far outside of our existence. If you have problem with the with my premise that you will know nothing of God unless God reveal it to you, it is because you have a small vision of the God in the Bible, or the God who created all things. If you have a grand vision, if you have an understanding of what it means to be God, I'm not just saying the God of the Bible, but what it means just by the very definition of being God, that you are the most supreme being, highest above all things, all wisdom, all power, all love. So by definition, nothing can be more powerful than you, more loving than you, or it would be God. Then you come to realize that I'm not smart enough to comprehend the infinite, which really leads us to the second reason why God must reveal himself, and that is God is too big. Not only are we not smart enough, but God is way too big for us. Humans are finite. God is infinite. He is limitless in his person. So we are hindered by both our mental capabilities and God's supremacy to such an extent that it is an impossibility to know God apart from him revealing himself to us. In some way, it's like the ant trying to understand the human apart from humans injecting themselves into the world of the ant. The ant has no reference point for who humans are or even what their existence even means. You think about the ant and when he goes about his day, he doesn't think, well, I wonder what those humans are doing. Now, Marvel Comics and Disney World and Aesop may want you to think that, right? And so we think, oh, isn't that a nice little ant? I bet he, you know, is scared of me or what. He could care less. He doesn't know who you are. He doesn't have the ability. You are so far outside of his existence. He doesn't know what human means. He didn't have the ability to process thought in such a way. It's all instinct that he can even know what human is. He doesn't know that we walk around and we drive around and that we do what we do. He's minuscule. He's tiny. He's in his own little world down there. Ants don't have the capability to think outside of their own existence. And we're way outside of their existence, far too great for them to form any knowledge about us. The only time an ant has any reference point for what humans are is when you and I step on an ant bed. Then they know something about humans. They know that there is a foot or there is something that has just invaded my world. When we step into the world of the ant, then the ant has some understanding, though it be very limited and though it be very small, he has some understanding of the human. That is how it is with God. Except that God would reveal himself, step into the world that he created of the human, we would have no reference, we would have no understanding, we would have no mental capacity to even realize who God is, what God is, and be able to interact with him in any way. So the only reason we know about God is because God has revealed himself to us. And so tonight, I want to talk to you about one of two categories that describe the way God has revealed himself. And the first of these two categories is called general revelation. How God has revealed himself to us in general revelation. Now, let me just give you a working definition. This is a very simple and oversimplistic, admittedly, definition. But general revelation refers to God's general witness to himself through nature. All right? General revelation refers to God's general witness to himself through nature. In other words, God uses nature to testify to his own existence and to his character. So when God created, he created not just so that we would have a place to exist. He created so that as we existed in that place, it would reveal that, hey, there is a being called God, and here is some things that you can know about him. All right? And this is seen most clearly really in two areas. So I'm giving you two C's tonight. I have 2 points, right? This is your first point. God has revealed himself in creation. So under general revelation, where God has revealed himself in nature, that first area of nature is creation. So, Psalm chapter 19, verse 1 and 2, and this will probably be a familiar passage to you. Psalm 19, 1 and 2, it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge." Look at all of the terms of revelation that are in there. The heavens declare the glory of God. Now, in the Bible, there are three heavens. There are the heavens that you and I can see with the naked eye. There are the heavens of space that we need a telescope to see. And then there are the, it's called the third heaven, which is where we will be for eternity if you have a relationship with Christ. The psalmist is speaking about the first heaven. When you look into the heavens and everything that is there and everything that takes place there, it declares the glory of God. And the sky above also, he's just repeating himself, it proclaims his handiwork. We see the handiwork of God in the sky above day to day. The coming of the day and the going of the day and the coming of the day and the going of the day. It pours out speech. And night to night, it reveals knowledge. Well, what is it saying? What is it declaring? What knowledge are we gaining? It is shouting to us, proclaiming to us, there is a God, and he is glorious, and he is grand. When you look at the sun and the moon and the stars and the galaxies, they all speak of a creator. However, they also speak of the greatness and magnificence of that creator. When you see how all of creation works together, the planets revolving around the sun, the seasons of the year, the different cycles of the weather, and on, it speaks of God's wisdom and his understanding of how to put all of this together. When you see a full moon or a budding flower or a snow-covered field, it speaks of the beauty and the glory of God. So the creation of God doesn't just speak to the fact that God is there, but it speaks to us about the God who is there. It isn't just saying, hey, there is a God. It's saying there is a God and he is wise and he is all powerful and he is glorious and he is magnificent. It reveals his character. But also look at Romans chapter 1, verse 19 and 20. It says, "For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world, in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse." God's revelation is not something read into nature by those who already know God from some other source. It is already present by the creation and continuing providence of God, because he intended it to be that way. Notice in these verses first that God is the reason that you know him. For what can be known about God is plain to them. Why? Because God has shown it to them. That's why they know about it. Again, you know nothing of God except for the fact that he has decided to reveal himself to you. But notice also that God has made himself clearly known. There isn't some special encoded message that only a few get so that they get to know about God. God said, "It is very clear. I have made it clearly known. That was my intent. I want you to look into creation and see that there is a God and see my attributes." And then also that it was intentional on God's part from the very beginning, ever since the creation of the world. This was God's plan all along, to create in such a way so that it would clearly be seen that there is a God and this is who he is. That is God's grace towards us through general revelation. So God intended for man to know him in creation. But number two, God has also revealed himself in conscience. In conscience, that's our second C. In Romans chapter 2, verse 14 through 16, "For when Gentiles do not have the law, by nature do what the law requires, they are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the work of the law is written on their hearts while their conscience also bears witness. And their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them on the day when, according to my gospel, God judges the secrets of men by Christ Jesus. There's an inner understanding of right and wrong in each of us. Now, many would say that these are learned behaviors, and I would say, okay, I agree with that. There are certainly rights and wrongs that we have to learn in life. You're not born with just an innate sense of everything that is right and everything that is wrong. But even in a little child, in a very young age, they just know intuitively that some things are wrong. They're just not right. And even those that would say, I don't even believe in a God. I don't even believe in the existence of a creator, have an inner conscience that serves as a compass to guide them through most basic moral decisions. God put that in all of us. And it, like creation, speaks not just to God, but also about God. He has placed something of his own standards of right and wrong in each of us, and in so doing, he gives evidence that he is right, that he is holy, that he is good, and that he is just. So in both creation, as we look out across the expanse of all that God has done with his hand, and even inwardly, as we look on the heart and see the moral compass that is there that God has placed in each of his creation, we see God saying, I am here, and this is who I am. And so how does that affect us? Well, number one, it means that you can know God. Now, that may be like the most, well, duh statement after everything that we just said. But I want you to think about that statement. You can know God. As Christians, I think we minimize the weight of that statement because we take it for granted. But the fact that God has chosen to reveal himself and to create us with the capacity to know him is quite glorious in and of itself. It is the invitation to the finite to know something of the infinite. Think about that. You and your finiteness have been invited by the infinite being, the one who created all things, to say, you can know me. It means that God intends for man to relate with him. That the intent of God in creating man was that we would have a relationship with him. Otherwise, why would he say, listen, I'm going to do everything I can to show you and give you these billboards that are flashing. I am here and this is who I am. He wants to relate with us. It is the possibility of the mundane to be to understand something of the magnificent. I mean, in the grander scheme of things, really, what is our value? We are but dust, not much of anything. Apart that we were from the fact that we were created in the image of God, and so God says, yet I'm still going to allow you to be and to know and to understand something of the magnificence of me. At a minimum, this truth should bring hope to your life. Hope that there is something greater than you, something beyond this mundane existence, something better and greater and far more glorious. But number two, it means that everyone will be held accountable for rejecting God. Everyone will be held accountable for rejecting God. Did you notice what it said at the end of verse 20 in Romans 1? It said they are without excuse. Listen to what it says again in Romans 1, 20 and 21. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so that they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Everyone has been told by God that he exists, that he is there, that he is greater and grander than they are, that there is something beyond this, and every one of us have said, no, thank you. General revelation is enough to condemn, but not enough to save. You can look at the sunset and realize there is a God, but not that God has sacrificed his son. And I say all that to tell you, if everyone will be held accountable for rejecting God, but yet general revelation is not enough for them to have a personal relationship with God, it compels us to proclaim the gospel to those who are responsible for the revelation that they do have, and to tell them about the God who has revealed himself further in his word. And then finally, look for God in the everyday. And this could literally change the way that you face every day. When you look for God in the everyday, it will give you reason to praise and to worship him, and it reminds you of your purpose in life. God created you to worship him, to live every moment of your life in awe of who he is. How can we go a day without even acknowledging God in our lives when he has given us so many reminders of what a great God he is throughout all of creation? It's all around us. The weather shouldn't serve as a barometer to determine if we're going to have a good day or a bad day based on whether it's hot or cold or wet or dry. But it should serve as a reminder of the creativity and the provision of the God that loves you. Listen, if you will lift your nose out of the grind of life, you can see on the canvas of the night sky the wonder and awe of God as each night he paints a new and magnificent picture to give us just a small glimpse of his grandeur and his glory. Look, science is good and it has its place. But look, don't allow your ability to explain the order of things to rob you of the joy of reveling in the God who put it all in order. God wants you to look to his creation and to enjoy it so that ultimately you will enjoy and glorify him. Don't miss out on this precious gift of God's grace in your life. He wants you to see him. He wants you to know him. And he wants you to glory in him. And every day when you just open your eyes, there are reminders all around you. And he's saying, this is who I am. This is who I am. And he gives you opportunity to say, I praise you. I love you. I glory in you. So God has revealed himself, and it is an exciting thing. And he has done it in nature, through creation, and through conscience. Now, what questions might you have tonight regarding the general revelation of God?